Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we're joined by Emily Chang. Emily is Head of Product at Oyster. It's great to have you join us, Emily. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this with me today.
Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure, Emily. It's an absolute pleasure. Now, I'd love to get a bit of background on your personal career journey and what that kind of looks like, because I've done a bit of research, I hope you don't mind, a little bit of internet stalking. You started your career studying law, is that correct?
That's correct.
So then what was the transition like going from law into technology, and why did you do that transition? Why did you make that change?
Yes, and it happened over multiple hops as well. So yeah. It wasn't from law to tech. It's quite a roundabout journey. Mm-hmm. I think high level, I just want to say it's okay to take a long time to find out what you're good at and enjoy.
Absolutely.
So I started in law because I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. And then I very quickly realized it was not something I found enjoyable. Sitting on my desk, you had to track your time by 6-minute increments.
Really?
Wow. What you were doing. And, you know, staring at contracts all day. And I was like, I want to try something different. So my next hop was actually in management consulting. And I enjoyed that because you got to see a range of different problems. You got to work on across different industries. But I also felt it was limiting because you were really working on a slide deck rather than in the actual execution.
Yeah.
So my next hop after that was into tech. By a business development role. And again, I felt, yes, this was great. I love the industry of tech, but BD wasn't something that made me excited. And so when I looked around and I saw what the product managers were doing, I was like, okay, this is something I think I would really enjoy and I could be good at. Let's try that. So that was the multiple hops that got me into product.
Amazing. That's brilliant to hear. And just in a nutshell, could you kind of describe the service that Oyster provides for us?
Sure. So Oyster removes the barriers to cross-border employment so that talented people around the world can build a great career no matter where they live. Mm-hmm. So how do we actually do that? Let's say you're a startup in the US and you have a developer that you want to hire in Canada. Traditionally, you would have to hire this person as a contractor or set up your own Canadian entity to employ this person. And then you will have to figure out compliance, payroll, benefits, and all of that. With Oyster, we hire this developer with our Canadian legal entity. We take care of the employment agreement, the payroll, the benefits. And then that developer will be assigned to you, the US startup, like any other employee in your organization. So sometimes this is called an employer of record service, but we're taking a software approach to this, making it much faster, cheaper, compliant, and transparent.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thanks for that, Emily. And also, you know, just to get the ball rolling a little bit, you've moved from Australia to Silicon Valley. So first of all, what kind of spawns that move to Silicon Valley in the first place from Australia? Because that's quite a big cultural change.
That's true. I originally was actually just coming over to the US for my MBA.
Right.
So that was the move. And that didn't seem like such a big move because a lot of consultants end up doing an MBA. Mm. When I was doing my MBA, I felt that opened my eyes up to the opportunities that was available in tech. And I thought, where better to get that experience than staying in Silicon Valley or coming into Silicon Valley and getting that experience. So who knows, it ended up being 12 years in the US.
Wow.
Did not expect to end up staying for this long, but there is a really great really great opportunities in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I mean, Silicon Valley is definitely one of those places that absolutely fascinates me. It really does. And you know, I've never been to Silicon Valley. All I know of Silicon Valley is what I've asked people about it, and then obviously you've got the sitcoms that are on, you know, TV, or just, I think there's one called Silicon Valley. So I've got a very loose, sketchy image of what Silicon Valley is actually like. But what would you say it's like really like day to day in Silicon Valley? Is it some kind of amazing universe that, you know, I'm picturing in my head now? Or is it kind of just kind of normal, I guess? How would you describe it?
First, Ben, I think you have to come out here and see it for yourself. Happy to host you one day.
That'd be great.
But it's a difficult question to ask because it's like asking someone who lives in London, what is London like?
Yeah.
Or asking someone who works in finance in New York, oh, New York is a finance city. What is it like living there? In a way, it's just like living anywhere. It's just that the percentage of people that you meet that work in tech is higher than other places. And what you take out of it is it's depending on the stage of life you're in. So if you are just coming out of university, it's a very different lifestyle to someone who is in their 30s or 40s, who's, you know, married with kids. So I don't know if I can generalize, but for me, in a sense, it seems very similar to living other places, just that there's a concentration of tech companies.
Mm. Would you recommend Silicon Valley in this day and age, even though kind of a lot of tech companies nowadays in very recent times, especially startups now, are kind of looking to hire people fully remote? So would you recommend moving to Silicon Valley if people are at that kind of stage in their career where they're kind of looking to move up in businesses? Would you recommend that as an option?
Oh, it's always an option.
Yeah.
Part of Oyster's business is that it doesn't have to be the only option now. So part of what we do is now that you can get this kind of opportunity with a US or a European startup anywhere in the world. But yes, it's always an option to come here because this is the highest concentration of companies. This is where you will have a range of options from your large tech companies to your startups. Yeah. I think if you're in a stage of life where you can make that move and financially and personally it makes sense, then I think it's something that you can definitely try and explore.
Day to day at Silicon, I don't want to talk about Silicon Valley too much here, Emily. We've got far more interesting stuff to talk about. But do you think that the culture within the businesses or the startups of Silicon Valley, would you say that they're different in any way? In the way they, the processes and maybe the way they attack problems, or would you say it's different there than, say, outside of that kind of tech hub?
So one is I've not worked for a startup outside of the Silicon Valley, so all my tech experience here. So I don't have a comparison, but what my sense is what is possible here, like people's imagination of what's possible here is bigger and larger.
Right.
Because if you see your friends and they've done a startup and they've got to a certain level of success, and then you're like, well, I could do that. I could achieve that. And I think that sense of possibility is stronger here than in other locations where you don't have that role model. You won't have your friends that have done it before. I think that's the difference. And I guess it is also an access to capital, access to opportunity that's here. But I think fundamentally it's a mindset that's different.
That's really interesting. And you mentioned at Oyster that you hire distributed teams. And am I right in thinking you've hired distributed teams yourself?
That's right. My own team, I grew from 4 people to 40 in 16 countries.
Oh, Jesus.
And the Oyster team grew from less than 10 to 200.
Wow.
And we're in 37 countries.
Wow. That's quite phenomenal scale we're talking there. I'm really interested to find out what are some of the pitfalls to be aware of in that kind of hiring on such a mass scale. What advice would you give?
Yeah, my overall sense, it is hard, but the benefits are worth it.
Mm.
It's hard because you still have to do all the things that you had to do when you're hiring locally, you still have to do, but at a global scale. So you have to figure out, where do I source candidates? In which country should I source candidates from? Who should I work with to source candidates? How much do we pay them? How do we go think about diversity? How do we do all the interview processes, online? How do we then give benefits to these people? So, and how do we build a sense of culture when we're in many different countries and come from many different backgrounds? So it is hard. You have to think through that. And actually, Oyster is building a lot of tools to help people, operations managers, and HR to think through this problem. But the benefits are definitely worth it. I do not think I could have built this team of the caliber that I built it if I tried to only hire these people in Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Oyster, you know, you're just saying the scale that you're hiring and the distributed teams on. Is a lot of that to do with COVID, or has this been going on for way before COVID?
So this industry did exist pre-COVID, but COVID definitely was an accelerant to the business. I think from a few different factors. One, when companies went remote, it made them think, well, we went remote in Silicon Valley, why not try out a developer in Vancouver or a salesperson in Mexico City? What's the difference now? Because everyone is online anyway, like distributed. The second accelerant is a lot of companies' own employees decided that they want to move. We saw that a lot in our UK business, where a lot of Europeans that work for UK startups distributed to their home countries, and they wanted to keep their jobs. So that's another accelerant due to COVID. And then the third is we do see some like contractor to employment employee conversion. Mm. So people that have worked with companies for a while and they want to have the benefits of employment wants to convert from being contractors into FTEs.
You mentioned culture before, and if you're hiring teams on a large scale like you have been doing, how do you get that sense of culture? How do you grow a culture, and how do you implement a culture at such scale when everyone's distributed?
Yeah, I think culture is always a hard question. I think culture is hard in any startup, even if they have an office. Yeah. So if you go to a startup, some startups work 24/7, and that's like you're always on. That's their culture. You know, it's all about the water cooler conversations or how you access executives. So I think there are some negatives from a in-office culture that you can actually change when you're fully distributed. So it's not always like a negative. I think with Oyster, we really value AC communications. So we focus on written communication, which actually benefits a lot of people that prefer that type of work over kind of lots and lots of meetings, you know, always on.
Yeah.
Really value people can work in their own time zone rather than all have to shift time zones to the Silicon Valley time zone, which is not realistic for most of the world.
Yeah.
And we believe that the diversity that we bring in, and we have diversity just from kind of the country diversity, that's bringing a different culture into Oyster. Mm. So, I think there's been a lot of positives. But yes, we have to take an extra step to get to know a team because you might not have those kind of water cooler conversations, but you have a richer conversation, and that's all building the culture because we're getting to know each other better.
Do you find that people in technology are really accepting of working remotely? It seems to me that it's kind of one of the industries that's really lucky in the sense that people in technology can just work remotely quite frictionless and work distributed really easily. I guess the question is, do you feel that it's been quite a smooth process to onboard?
It's definitely easier in tech than other industries. Not every industry can move completely distributed. Mm. I think tech also had a head start because of, you know, lots of tech companies pre-COVID had developers or other teams around the world. It was always an industry where you could not hire all your talent in one geography, and or you had to service customers around the world. So you had to build out teams around the world. So I think people are already very used to working across multiple countries. So there was a head start there. But at the same time, I don't think it's something that you can do without any thinking. You have to think, what's our mode of communication going forward? Or how do we go about building collaboration and team and culture? So you do have to put thought behind this process. And, you know, we actually have a head of remote at Oyster. So to think through some of those processes and how to become a better fully distributed company.
What is your hiring process like? I mean, I presume it's very different when you're hiring distributed than you are not distributed? Or is it quite similar?
Some of the steps are quite similar in the sense that, you know, if you take a developer, you get a screening interview, you get a pairing interview, and then you have a technical Q&A. Well, one thing that is maybe different is that we have shortened the process, because sometimes when you do these developer interviews in person, they would go all day and you want to meet one person in every team, and it's like, and suddenly your whole day is packed full of interviews. Yeah. And we've shortened that process down to essentially 2 hours, you know, a 1 hour pairing exercise. I think it's an hour and a half and an hour technical Q&A, because no one wants to spend like their whole day on Zoom being interviewed. And so it's trying to make the process a little tighter. Most of the process follow that kind of process where we do a screen interview with your hiring manager and some kind of case study. You know, in the case of developers, it's that pairing exercise side by side, but for most other roles, it's a case study.
Right.
And that's a little bit different because it's a take home. You take the case study home, you spend a couple hours preparing, and then you come back and do a presentation, because that replicates kind of the async work that you're going to be doing at Oyster.
Yeah.
A lot of what you're going to be doing is thinking, writing, reflecting, and then coming back to present.
Wow. It's interesting, isn't it? And I'm really interested to find out how you've learned about this, essentially. I mean, where do you look? Where are your resources? How did you learn about this? It's so interesting.
You learn through talking to people who know more than you. You know, in the case of hiring, that we have, you know, very talented senior talent advisors who can come in and give us advice. They've hired for other fully distributed companies in the past, or, you know, they just spent many years in this industry, so they know the best practices. I think that's always the best way. You read articles of there are companies who are having ahead of the trend, and they have been fully distributed for 5, 10, 20 years. So you read the content they produce and see what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd like to find out a little bit more about yourself, Emily. I mean, we were just talking about, you know, how you learn about this, but then also, what do you do day to day? What resources do you rely on?
I think a few different things. My top three, one is to actually learn from my team.
Yeah.
So one thing from hiring is you hire people who can bring different skill sets to the team, skills that you don't have. Let's say I don't come from the HR tech industry, so you can build out that industry expertise on your team. Or you hire people who are really great at storytelling and learn from them. So that's first, learn from the people that you can hire onto your own team.
Yeah.
I tend to read more news than tech news, because I feel like you're surrounded by work every day. But I think I do read the news every day, because in the end, it's not about tech. It's about the world that we're living in and what are the trends and what's happening there. And then just having really good advisors. If you can surround yourself by finding mentors and advisors who you can bounce ideas off, who, you know, you can not be afraid to be vulnerable and say, you know, I have made this mistake, or I don't know how to figure out this problem, help me. They can give you kind of very honest feedback as well.
And on the question, on the topic of mentors, have you had a mentor throughout your career at all, or have you had mentors, plural?
Yes, I've had mentors throughout my career, but different mentors at different stages.
Yeah.
Because as you go in your career, you're going to need different types of mentors. You know, mentors, one that can help you, for example, in the earlier in my career, how to crack product management, like how to even get your first product management role. And then mentors in terms of once you get to a certain level, how do you crack the next level, right? How do you make that jump to from a IC individual contributor to a team manager? And now it's like, now I'm in a leadership role, how to do well in that role. So I would say mentors around those three stages.
What would you say is the most important aspect of that, of being a leader?
There's many different aspects, but I think keeping kind of lines of communication open is really important. So with the other executives on the team, with our founder, with my own team, how do you keep an open and honest dialogue going at all times? I think it's really, I'm back to the team again, because when you're executive, most of the work is done by your team. Yeah. And most of the decisions will be made by your team. So hiring the right team and then ensuring that they have the tools and processes and the understanding of where we're going to make those decisions and build out their own team, that's also critical as well. In the end, like, work is only one part of your life. So I think it's important for you to be able to balance other pieces of your life, you know, your family, your health, your friends as well, so that you can have the sustained energy at work. Because if there are other things in life that's not going well, then that's going to impact your work as well. So those are my top three ideas right now.
Yeah, well, that's so interesting, because I think you're exactly right. I think, you know, allowing people to have, you know, a work-life balance is so important. Like you were saying, you know, work isn't that person's whole entire life. You know, they have a life outside of work. It's just one part of their life. And I think a lot of managers, or maybe some managers and leaders, kind of overlook that fact. I've definitely worked at businesses where that's been massively overlooked. And they think your life is the job that you're doing and your career. And it totally isn't. It's just a small, it can be quite a big part of it, but not, you don't live and breathe it. So I think that's a really important message that you've just said there.
Yeah, I'm actually very happy that, you know, for example, paternity leave, Oyster pays 3 months full salary of paternity leave.
Wow.
Because we want to set, and we obviously also on maternity as well, but paternity in particular, because I have people on my team taking paternity leave right now. And they were surprised on, you know, what Oyster is willing to offer. And we need to go beyond necessarily the employment regulation in the country and think about what is good for our team. And when you have a new baby, you know, you should have that time to bond with the baby. And so those are all things that we're really thinking about. And for example, how do we, you know, structure the teams at Oyster, my team in particular, so that there is a time zone overlap within the team, so that they don't have to work longer than they're all outside of their normal working hours. So those are all things that we are thinking about, you know, what HR processes and benefits we offer and how we work day to day to improve the work-life balance.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I love to hear that as well. I love to hear that. It's exactly what businesses should be doing, really. In this day and age where businesses can have their own kind of microclimate of how they work, why not, you know, look at how to make people more happy, I guess. I think that's probably, could be the bottom line of it, how to make your employees happy, would you say?
Yes, definitely. It's actually one of our OKRs.
Oh, really?
So, yes, employee satisfaction.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, brilliant. It's really interesting, Emily. I'd like to ask, maybe nearly wrapping this up here, if you could have a think back or have a retrospective look back at your career, if you can remember when you, or think back to when you started out in this area or this space, is there anything that you kind of wish you were told back in those early days that you've gone on to learn the difficult way?
I think I would have told myself two things. One is you have to know yourself better than anyone else.
Yeah.
You have to know what kind of career you want, what you enjoy doing, what you're good at, because no one else is going to know you and what you want from life more than you. And then the other one is to take risks earlier. Yeah. I think I was still a little bit conservative, you know, with family background and whatnot. And I think I would have pushed myself to take more risks early on, because when you're young, there's so many things you can do.
Yeah.
And I really think I would have told myself to take more risks.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because there's no time limit of when you can change your career, really. I mean, people in their 30s don't know what they want to do. People in their 40s, 50s, 60s, even 70s, 80s, the number goes on, might still have no idea what career path they want to take. And, you know, even thinking back to my own career, I know this isn't a podcast about me, Emily, but I had no idea what I wanted to do even 5 years ago, you know. So I think, like you said, taking chances is really important because you can kind of figure out what you like and what you don't like and what you do want to do and what you don't want to do. And essentially, there's no job or career out there that's out of reach. You can kind of do anything you want.
Yeah, Ben, now are you in a career that you love?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think back to what I said earlier, I think it's okay to take a long time to find that. And I didn't find product until my 30s. And that's okay too. It's not like I wasted everything I've done before, or stepping stones and things that I learned. But I think it's okay to say, actually, I'm going to take a completely different turn in my career and find something that I really enjoy.
Yeah. And on those stepping stones throughout your life, everything is an experience, and you can learn from every one of those stepping stones. You know, even if it's a negative experience, you're learning from it. And I think from my point of view, one of the best things you can do is be patient and think, well, if you're not having a great time in your career, technology is a great place to move to because, you know, you can learn outside of work. There's free code camps that, in you know, tech businesses take really seriously now. But yeah, I mean, everything's an experience, and patience is key with your career, I think.
Right. And you think, if you don't need to think 30s is so late, but you're not even halfway. There's plenty of time.
Absolutely. Definitely. It's really interesting. And I think to wrap up, Emily, I've thought of a little game as we've been talking here now. And I hope you don't mind if I put you on the spot a little bit, but I've been thinking of words that we've been kind of discussing throughout the conversation. And I've got four of them that I've just jotted down. If I say the word, could you give me your immediate thought on that word?
Okay. Let's go.
Okay. Number one, oyster.
Fully distributed.
Brilliant. Remote work.
Ace in communication.
Very good.
Work-life balance.
Yep. Leadership.
Team.
Very good. And finally, culture.
Find your own fit.
End of round, end of quiz show. Emily, I'm pleased to say you have won the quiz round.
I felt a little bit like I went to the psychologist here.
Oh, really? That's surprising. That's not actually surprising because a lot of people do say things like that after they've had a conversation with me.
Another career option down the road, then.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because, you know, in these conversations, it is about looking back on your career, and maybe some people think about things and discuss things that they've hadn't had to think about for, say, 20 or even 30 years, you know, and it can be quite therapeutic in a way, I guess.
Yes.
Emily, I've had an absolutely lovely time chatting with you today. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I've really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.